out of adversity, we receive an opportunity. Sometimes when I am down in the country where I grew up, I travel down the road about 3.5 miles from where my mom and dad lived to a place where we all lived with my sisters and my parents, where we all lived in a place way back in the woods. The house and the barns are gone. Many things have been cleared out. Others have grown up. When I look at that place, I am reminded of my childhood and what things looked like. Of course, they are much smaller than my imagination, but it was home for over 20 years of my life. When we lived there, it was very cold in the wintertime and very hot in the summertime. Of course, there was no such thing in our house as central heat and air. There was a heater in one room in the wintertime and a fan in the window in the summertime. Cold linoleum floors. Oh my goodness, they were the coldest things you've ever got out of bed and put your feet on in the morning. They were worn through in many spots, and they felt like ice when you touched your feet upon them on those cold winter mornings. You'd grab your clothes and you'd take off running to what we called the heater room. That's what it was called. It was the den, you would imagine, the living room. I said it's the only one we had, so that's where we stayed. A place for a family of five to live and grow and work and love. You see, the house and surrounding barns were far from beautiful or impressive, but I miss the good times there. Wouldn't we all like to return to the home of our youth if it was a good place, if it was a good place to remember? You know, everybody doesn't have a good place to remember. Sometimes today is the best, and praying for a better tomorrow. A place where you could play in trees and sheds that seemed so large, hang out with your parents and keep your mouth shut. You didn't ask a whole lot of questions until everybody was gone if there was company. Then you could talk. Our parents were younger then, and they were full of answers to our questions when they had time. Playing with your neighborhood friends, and you could talk and you could dream. But instead, many of our parents today are gone. And those that are left spent much of their days remembering their youth and friends that are gone, spouses that are no longer here. It's true that, as the saying goes, you can't go home again. And what that means is, yeah, you can drive back to the place where you grew up. You can get out and walk around, but the thing of going home, you can go there in your mind. But truly, everything being like it is never going to happen again. That's why you can't go home again. As much as we long for the glory, that glory road that we traveled along the way, we find that the curves in the road are the same. But everything along the path is different. You see, the roads are the same, but the path is different. Our story from today's scripture lesson is from the prophet Isaiah. It's about God speaking to a people who once had a way of life that is now lost. A way of life that is lost. And like me, they really want to live that way again, just for a little while. Life has been good, or so it had seemed, right up to the time that the Babylonians came to town. They killed many of their family and friends, carried off the youngest and the best into a foreign land, occupied their homes and ate from their gardens and their bounty. The people of Judah lost the world that they had known and loved for so long to a group who did not care. It would be generations before the land would be returned to them. When I think about this scene, I think about the scene from The Lion King. How many of y'all remember when everybody is gone? Mufasa has been killed and Simba takes off because he's been told that he was the cause of his father's death, and Scar is this ugly, ugly lion who's left there. And he lets everybody and the hyenas and everything come in and just pillage the land. All the resources are used, all the resources are gone, and it looks like a wasteland and it's barren. And of course, we know that one day Simba's going to return and he's going to have his own son, the little lamb, the little lion cub is going to be out there, and we're going to see everything change. Well, all of a sudden, you know, we watch on that movie, of course, as everything begins to change all of a sudden. Just as soon as the right person gets back in the right spot, the right animal gets back in charge of the kingdom, everything starts growing and beautiful. But it says here that it's going to take generations, and it is going to take generations of time before the land would be returned to them. It's going to be a long time. And with this passage of time, they finally return to their homeland. And in the story today, there are a few generations away from their release from captivity. They're still being held. So it has been 50 years since returning to their beloved Jerusalem. A lot of things can happen in 50 years. And things have not been restored to the beauty and glory that they had kept in their minds and in their hearts. Campfire stories are about the good old days of glory. How many of you like to hear people talk about the good old days of glory? Sometimes those stories are good, but sometimes you've probably heard them how many times? A lot. You can probably tell them better than the person who started telling them in the beginning. And the children can almost see the grandeur and the enthusiastic voices of their family members telling these stories. Well, that's a way we can learn a great deal, but we also know that stories sometimes have a way, just like my childhood, of remembering things different because we're little kids and we think it's the most magical and largest place on earth, but when we go back to it as adults, we're like, it's kind of small. That shelter weren't quite as tall as I thought it was. That barn weren't quite as big. All those things, all of a sudden, it changes for us. Efforts to rebuild the temple the way that Solomon had guided the original construction never materialized because they were trying to rebuild it just exactly like it had been quoted in Scripture from years before of what would be used in it. Looking at the rebuilding, they see a rather ragged-looking structure with decorations that lack the flair of the old. After all that work, it is still not what it used to be. Oh, it's still a beautiful place. It's still a good place. It's still a wonderful place that God has provided for all of us, but yet it's not ever going to be like it was. I can only imagine that their hearts and their spirits resemble the rubble that they are viewing. And worse yet, they are living with the Babylonians. And the Babylonians had left their mark on them. They'd left their mark on the land. They had left their mark on their homes. And they had left their mark on them. Their lives had been invaded. Beloved scenes had changed. And despondency had begun to set in amongst them all. They were just sitting there with a glaze over their eyes, not knowing what was going on. In many ways, Christian churches today are like the Jews who dream from the past. Think about that. We are still the same way. So many people remember the glory of the 50s and 60s when the mainline churches were full and active and the people gathered each Sunday for Sunday school and worship, had a picnic on the grounds. How many of you, we've been a part of that, but it wasn't every Sunday. But like the Jews, we are struggling to let go and move forward. You see, in the 50s and 60s, and I was born into the 60s, those were days of grandeur, and the church was it. Because guess what, folks? The church was the only game in town. Churches were full because that was your social activity of meeting people and talking, gathering. You could do whatever. You could sit around, stand around, tell stories. You could come, be a part of a Sunday school class and learn something, come and do a worship service and hear things, but you were a part of a bigger community. There wasn't all this other stuff available. You know, you need to think about our generation. I can remember when we got a telephone. People says, oh my gosh. I said, oh yeah, and it hung on the wall and you round and around. And there was one phone in the house, the whole house, one phone. But it had a cord on it long enough that you could probably reach from here to the front door. I mean, it would, bless its heart, it got stretched to death. But I can remember that coming, and guess what, people? It was a party line. There was two other people, and oh my gosh, was it a nightmare, trying to get the phone. And today we look at that and go, that's so obsolete. People have no clue what we're talking about. These young people look at us like, what are y'all talking about? Hang up. What do you mean hang up? Dial. We still say dial, as if you dial and you turn it. Then y'all got the punch buttons when they actually clicked. Now we have touch screen or memory, or we can tell it to call somebody, and it does it. So we have come a long way in all that. We have come a long way. Things have changed, many for the better, but some not so. But here we think about those times that we want to go back. That's what we still teach. That's what we still preach. That's what's still out there. But guess what, folks? In the new day and time, and you can look at it every Sunday with the people that are sitting around you, there's anywhere from 60 to 70 people in church where there used to be 90 to 100. Why? Because guess what? We've got to do what? Keep up. And guess what? We can do everything in the world. We can have every kind of program we want, have the doors open, turn everything to the young people, turn everything to this way and that way, but still, we're going to get picked up by the younger families and the younger folks once a month if we're lucky. Sometimes once every 6 weeks. That's when people will come to church. And guess what? That is considered what? Active participation. When I grew up, if you missed a Sunday, you know, somebody was just going to fall over dead. There was not an option in my house growing up. You were not given an option. You were told. Today is different. We have choices. We've got more to choose from. There's more things going on. There's more activities. People say we're more spiritual now than we've ever been in our life. People can worship at home. People don't have to come. People can go other places. People can stay at home and worship on their phone, they say. We can do all kinds of things. We do not have to go anywhere. We can stay in the comfort of our home and do exactly what we've been doing all these years at church. But what we are missing and what people are reinventing and doing again and again is, guess what? Would you ever think in the world that you grew up in, if you're anywhere in my age, a little bit older or younger, just a little bit younger, that you would have to plan and have a family dinner together? You'd have to make time to do it. We grew up in a time when you ate together every meal. Now it's like you're lucky if the family sits down together at all. We've had a generation of folks who grew up eating their breakfast on the way to school in a vehicle, and eating their supper on the way after a ball practice or a game or a concert or a recital or something in a vehicle. Fast food, we've got a whole generation of folks who are raising children who grew up that way. The same thing, because guess what? That's what our life has become. And no longer is the church the focus. We still teach and preach like everybody's going to show up at every time. And we sit around and we get upset because people aren't coming to church. And then we try to do every program in the world. We try to do everything. We try to get people to start standing on their head or doing whatever over here, juggling, whatever, to get people in. People will go where they want to go. People will do what they feel like they want to do. And it's no longer the church. It's no longer the pastor. It's no longer that Sunday school teacher. Oh, we love them. We like them. We think they're the best thing in the world, but we saw them a few weeks ago. We don't have to see them again for another few weeks. They'll be all right. It's okay. But that's what we're living in this world. That's why we are still struggling. We are just like the Jews of that day. We are struggling to let go and move on. I believe that mainline churches are beginning to listen just a little bit to the promises of God from today's passage. Many of us are turning the tide from the past and looking forward to a reforming Christianity. The term postmodern is part of our language, and it's become a staple in discussions. We speculate about the forms that it should take, what the new messages will be, and the expanse of mission work the church should hold close. You see, this is not a new dream for Christianity. You see, parallels with John Wesley's time here are remarkable. John Wesley believed that God had raised the people called Methodist to reform the nation, particularly the church, and to spread spiritual holiness over the land. I believe that Wesleyans today should welcome the reforming church, or as we say today, the emerging church. The emerging leaders are attuned to today's cultural and moral and theological perspectives. I believe that all Christians, regardless of denomination affiliation, should support this emerging church movement. I think that new leaders like you and me are aware of the need to be reforming and not dwelling in the past, just as Wesley did in his lifetime. When God promises a new temple better than the original, and a new heaven and a new earth, the expectation is that Christians will think less of the past and more in the future. You see, Isaiah brings these words today in the Old Testament, a prophet. Years later in the book of Revelation, John tells us that he saw a new heaven and a new earth in chapter 21, verse 1. I think he is picking up on Isaiah's theme, because Isaiah's theme speaks of a time of joy, abundance, peace, and safety that would replace the sadness, the poverty, the war, the insecurity that the people of Isaiah's time had known. You see, both Isaiah and John saw God making a new life. And it was good. It was good again. Even Paul tells us in Romans 8:18 that he had foreseen something similar when he said to all of us, he says, "I have considered that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory about to be revealed to us." You see, this vision of a new heaven and a new earth promises us that good things lie ahead. God will make life new and good again. Even more, God can make our lives new and good again. You see, God has promised us that our new temple is going to be better than the original, and a new heaven and a new earth. The expectations is that you and I, as Christians, need to think less of the past and more of the future. We have our tradition, our foundations, our structure in the past, and we take that and we move to the future. We should all be focusing on the church's purposes and values, vision of discipleship and mission. You see, we can learn much from Isaiah about this new heaven, this new earth, and reforming life. We can look forward to God's promise. Today, I say, let us learn to forget what was good before but is not now. and look forward to a new life and a new Christian experience. Let us put away the old and look to new ways of serving Him in our world today and all the tomorrows that are yet to come. Let us pray.